Good morning. Let me begin by wishing all the mothers a happy Mother's Day. Our text for preaching comes from 1 Kings chapter 17, verses 7 through 16. That's 1 Kings chapter 17, verses 7 through 16. Sometime later, the brook dried up because there had been no rain in the land. Then the word of the Lord came to him. Go at once to Zarephath in the region of Sidon and stay there. I have directed a widow there to supply you with food. So he went to Zarephath. When he came to the town gate, a widow was there gathering sticks. He called to her and asked, would you bring me a little water in a jar so I may have a drink? As she was going to get it, he called and bring me, please, a piece of bread. As surely as the Lord your God lives, she replied, I don't have any bread, only a handful of flour in a jar and a little olive oil in a jug. I am gathering a few sticks to take home and make a meal for myself and my son, that we may eat it and die. Elijah said to her, don't be afraid. Go home and do as you have said. But first make a small loaf of bread for me from what you have and bring it to me. And then make something for yourself and your son. For this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. The jar of flour will not be used up and the jug of oil will not run dry until the day the Lord sends rain on the land. She went away and did as Elijah told her. So there was food every day for Elijah and for the woman and her family. For the jar of oil and the jar of flour was not used up in keeping with the word of the Lord spoken by Elijah. My brothers and sisters, this morning I want to share with all of us that God provides, but more importantly, because it's Mother's Day, I want to simply say God provides for mothers. There is an old Jewish proverb which says God could not be everywhere and therefore he made mothers. Growing up, that seemed to be true. And even if she wasn't there physically, she seemed to have an uncanny sense of what sort of mischief I was getting into or about to get into. Abraham Lincoln wrote, all that I am or ever hope to be, I owe to my angel mother. President George Washington once said, my mother was the most beautiful woman I ever saw. All I am, I owe to my mother. The inventor Thomas Edison attributed his success to his mother. And when he says, the memory of her will always be a blessing to me. And maybe you can relate to the astute observation of the late writer Irma Bombeck, who stated, when your mother asks, do you want a piece of advice? It is a mere formality. It does not matter if you answer yes or no. You're going to get it anyway. It is widely reported that on one occasion, a London editor submitted to William Churchill for his approval a list of all the teachers he had in his life. Churchill looked at the list, handed it back to the reporter and said, you have omitted to mention the greatest of my teachers, my mother. And it's absolutely true that our mothers taught us a variety of very important things on a wide variety of subjects. Things our mothers taught us was common sense. If everyone else jumped off a cliff, would you do it too? They taught us preparation. Make sure you wear clean underwear in case you're in an accident. They taught us about the circle of life. I brought you into this world and I can take you out of it. She taught us about our farming roots. What? Were you born in a barn? She taught us about payback. One day you will have kids and I hope they are just like you. She taught us about the importance of prayer. You better pray that stain comes out of the coffin. In the Bible, there are many great models of motherhood for us to be inspired by. The boldness of the mother of the sons of Zebedee, James and John, who boldly asked Jesus to grant her two sons seats on the right and the left in his future kingdom. And we know that at times mothers can be brokenhearted, just like Hannah, who hadn't been able to bear her husband any children. And out of her anguish, she poured her heart out to God, promising that if God granted her a child, she would dedicate him to the Lord's service for their entire life. And then there's loyalty displayed in Ruth, the Moabite, who left the comfort and safety of her homeland to move with her mother-in-law back to her homeland, where Ruth knew nobody and would likely experience rejection. But God granted her favor, and not only did he give her a husband, but also a son, and she ended up becoming the great-grandmother of King David. This morning, we are going to look briefly at the courage and faith of a woman who is unnamed. We know she is a widow, that God had plans for her life that she was unaware of. She was minding her own business, trying to provide for her son and herself during a widespread famine that had swept across the land for the past 3 years. But despite her best efforts, she had come down to the very last portion of food. Things had become quite desperate when God stepped in and demonstrated his love and awareness of her needs. In verse 13, Elijah tells the widow woman, "Don't be afraid." Someone has said that there are over 350 instances of God telling people to not be afraid in Scripture. What God often does is bring us right to the edge of our fears to make the point where we cannot pull this off on our own strength and might and resources, and then teaches us that he is enough. Because if we can always provide for our needs when we do not learn real reliance upon God. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven, in the first sentence out of Jesus's mouth of his very first sermon. In preaching class, they teach you to start off your sermon with an attention-grabbing first statement. Jesus would have certainly gotten A for that opening line, because in that culture, and often in ours as well, poverty is seen as a curse from God, and wealth often is seen as a blessing or stamp of approval by God. But I stop by to let you know that God does not operate that way. In that statement, Jesus is saying, blessed are you when you do not have enough. Blessed are you when you cannot figure it out or dig yourself out of your current problem. The Message translation says, blessed are you when you're at the end of your rope. For it is when we come to the end of ourselves that Jesus meets us there, because then there's finally room enough for Jesus to show up. Most of us would prefer not to live being poor in spirit. We do not want to be destitute, not be able to figure out a way out of our situation, because that will reflect badly on us. It would say that perhaps we mismanaged our finances or made poor decisions to bring us to this point, and we do not want to look bad. To be poor in spirit means you have come to the end of your striving. You've come to the end of clawing and struggling to make it. And you cannot look good, and you realize you need help. Let us consider some of the first three steps of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous that not only speaks to those with alcoholism, but speaks to us who have our very own struggles. We have to admit that we are powerless over those struggles, that our lives have become unmanageable. We have to come to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity, and then decide to turn your will and life over to the care of God. We do not want to be poor in spirit, but we know to be rich in spirit would probably describe a person who is prideful and arrogant, and we know God despises them. So we would prefer to be middle class in spirit. That way we keep God neatly tucked away in our back pocket and go to him when we really need him. Keep God in reserve, break glass in case of an emergency. We want God to be our co-pilot, assisting us to get through the storms of life. But Jesus did not list that as an option for his followers. God does not want to be your assistant. Many Christians want to follow Jesus close enough that they can get Jesus' help and benefits, but not so close that it requires everything from them. But Jesus did not offer us his help to make our lives easier. He defined what it meant to be a follower of his way. He said to them, "Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross daily and follow me." That means giving up my agenda and following God's agenda for my life. That is what Jesus did every day, and that is what Elijah had been living for 3 years. In the first 6 verses of our chapter, every day ravens would come by morning and evening with bread and meat. And this happened every day for 3 years during the drought. The Lord had declared what happened. Elijah certainly had learned total dependence upon the Lord during this time. And the widow is at that point as well. Did you notice in her response to Elijah that she was down to the very last morsel of food she owned? Elijah encountered her at the very brink of eating her very last meal. She was gathering up sticks for a fire to cook the very last loaf of bread for her and her son. And then the plan in her mind was that would be it. They would then starve to death together after this last supper. Notice that God calls Elijah, who had learned to be totally dependent upon God, to meet up with a destitute widow to provide him with food. Now, why would God do this? Did God run out of meat and bread to bring Elijah? Were the ravens going on strike? No. Then why did God decide to quit feeding Elijah? And why did God choose a destitute woman of all people to be the one asked to provide Elijah with his next meal? Why not call upon a well-to-do couple? The reason is because they would not have learned the lessons and appreciated the blessings that this penniless widow would have. And did you notice that God tells Elijah that he had prearranged and commanded this woman to provide food to Elijah? But in the interchange between Elijah and the woman, it certainly does not appear that she is following God's command here. And I am convinced this is how God works oftentimes. We do not hear an audible command from God, but he prompts our hearts and puts us just in the right spot at the right time to receive his blessing and to see his love demonstrated through the actions of others. And yet, even in that scenario, it still depended upon her response to Elijah's request. What if she had said no to his request for some bread? She would have missed out on God's blessing and his deepening of her faith. Let me ask you, how has God used situations to teach you dependence upon him in the past? And where perhaps is he leading you right now to receive his blessing and learn a greater level of dependence upon him? Notice what Elijah asked her to do. He asked her first to make a loaf of bread for him and then go back and make a loaf for her and her son, and to trust God that he will provide enough oil and flour to make more for her son. Don't you kind of wonder how this came down? Here is how I envision it happening. She used up the very last bit of flour and oil to make Elijah's bread. I expect that both the jug of oil and the jar of flour were completely empty when she went to take Elijah his bread. But when she came back, God had put more back into it. And seeing how God works at other times, I doubt the flour and oil containers were filled all the way up by God. I imagine God giving just enough each time for one more loaf of bread, because it is never about the amount of flour. It is never about the amount of oil God will provide. It is much more about learning dependence upon God. The act of giving this loaf of bread first to Elijah is referred in the Old Testament as the gift of first fruits. God had instituted this when he set up the various festivals. When they brought in a harvested crop from the field, the Israelites were required to offer up to God the very first section of the harvest to God as an offering. It was a risky offering because if something were to happen and destroy the rest of the field during the night, you would be out of produce to feed your family with or to sell. You would have just given it all to God. It was an act of faith to give God the first and not the leftovers. You see, God is as concerned as what you give or how much you give as he is with why you give, because he knows a little secret. If you give out of faith and gratitude to God and give joyfully, you will also give sacrificially and abundantly. Remember when Jesus and his disciples sat outside the temple and watched all these people entering in and dropping their financial offerings into the container? I can imagine each person taking their $10 and breaking it into all pennies so that everyone would be able to hear and be impressed with the clanging of the money against the bottom of the metal container. But the only one Jesus commented on was the widow, who gave her very last coin to God. Jesus sat down opposite the place where the offerings were put and watched the crowd putting their money into the temple treasury. Many rich people threw in large amounts, but a poor widow came and put in two very small copper coins worth only a few cents. Calling his disciples to him, Jesus said, "Truly, I tell you, this poor widow has put more into the treasury than all the others. They all gave out of their wealth, but she, out of her poverty, put in everything, all she had to live on." Monetarily, this poor widow did not put in more than everyone else did. But she gave sacrificially to God. She gave her last two coins to God and was trusting that he would continue to sustain her life. It is not about the amount, but about the heart. There's no law that required her to give her last two coins to God, but she wanted to and did. It is safe to say that she gave extravagantly and out of faith. It does not say what happened to her, but I bet it is safe to say that God blessed this widow's life as he also did with the widow who fed Elijah. With that widow every day, God gave her enough to sustain her for that day. She learned the power to Jesus's prayer when he asked, "Give us this day our daily bread." Most of us believe we could provide for our daily bread, but here's two examples where neither of them could unless God stepped forward and provided it. And that is where your faith grows tremendously deeper. When you need God to come through or it is over and you wait on God. And I stopped by to let you know that waiting on God can be scary, but it can also be unprecedented growth in your faith and trust in God. And so let me ask you, in what area of your life are you trusting God for? It was Joni Erickson Tada whose notes, When life is rosy, we may slide by with knowing about Jesus, with imitating him and quoting him and speaking of him. But only in suffering will we know Jesus. We learn things about God in suffering that we can't learn any other way. Isaiah writes, "For I am the Lord your God who takes hold of your right hand and says to you, do not fear, I will help you." The psalmist says, "My flesh and my heart may fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever." Now back at our story with Elijah and the widow, a period of time goes by in which God daily provides just enough flour and oil for the widow, her son, and Elijah to continue to live on. But apparently the widow and Elijah still needed to go deeper in their dependency and trust in God. Remember, God is not concerned with comfort as he is with our Christ-likeness. Not only in our story this morning, but also through the life of every mother, one of the most important things he wants for you to do is to deepen your relationship with God through daily dependence upon him, and then to pass on that valuable lesson to your children as well. Your children desperately need to see Christ living in you and reflected to them. They need to see the depth of your faith. They see you depending upon God for your daily needs, as they see that in and through you, you will be passing on one of the greatest lessons a mom can ever teach their child, that of faith and dependency upon God. Through Elijah, God was teaching this mother to have patience in the midst of problems. God was teaching this mother to have hope in the midst of hardships. God was teaching this mother to be long-suffering in the midst of trials. Through Elijah, God would provide the calm needed in crisis, the blessed assurance in any affliction, the strength during his struggles, and the boldness he would need for her battles. So, to all the grandmothers and mothers being celebrated today, thank you for your faith legacy. Thank you for passing on your faith in Jesus Christ. Thank you for passing on your trust in Jesus Christ. Thank you for passing on your love for Jesus Christ. Thank you for passing on your hope for Jesus Christ. Thank you for being a teacher, a guide, a mentor, and a thank you for all children you have nurtured toward a mature faith. A faith that moves with grace from generation to generation. A faith that instills power, love, and a sound mind to all who call on the name of Christ as Lord. May God continue to give each and every mother flowers along every rough pathway, sunshine on every cloudy day, blessings outweighing your burdens, joy that erases your sorrow, and peace in the midst of every storm. And never forget that God provides for mothers. The message of God for the people of God, praise be to God. And for those who have not yet heeded the call to come to Christ today, today is a good day to confess your sins and be assured of your salvation. Christ will be your shield. Christ will be your security. Christ will be your standard bearer. Christ will be your guide. Christ will be your strength. You can trust him in the shadows and in the sunshines. You can trust him in the bad times and in good times. You can trust him as the captain of your soul. Your mother will be happy, and the angels in heaven will celebrate your salvation. May God continue to bless and keep you.